The following is a Cartoonerific Studios presentation.
Welcome to Cartoon Fun. It's Cartoonerific. Yeah!
Hello, and welcome to the Cartoonerific podcast, Classic Animated Cartoons. I am Brian Mitchell, and I am your host. You know, we have very many fans, and I know that sounds really weird. We have a lot of fans that are listening, a lot of people that listen to this religiously, which is really nice. I have a friend who listens to the podcast. He's not an animation guy. And I won't tell you his actual name. We'll just use Adrian. We'll use that name. Adrian! And so anyway, he listens to the podcast. And he said, you know, I don't understand why you have somebody else doing you. Because it definitely does not sound like you. And I said, well, you know, I use professional equipment for this podcast, and, you know, I run these filters and stuff. So, you know, it may not sound like me, but it is me doing the podcast. But, you know, without all these filters and stuff, I would sound like this.
Well, hello, and welcome to the Cartoonerific Podcast, Classic Animated Cartoons, with your host, me, Brian Mitchell.
Well, so as you can see, the equipment and all these magical gadgets that I plug things into makes me sound rich like this. So it is me, Adrian. It is me doing the podcast. It's just some magical gear that I happen to have. So there. Anyway, we're going to continue with our interview with wonderful, wonderful, talented artist Cynthia Petrovic. She's funny. She's witty. She's bright. She's very, very talented, and she's done some really wonderful things. And we're going to hear from her in our part two coming up right after this.
You're listening to the Cartoonerific Podcast, Classic Animated Cartoons, with your host animator, Brian Mitchell. And now it's time for our special Cartoonerific guest.
Well, you've been waiting for it. Everybody's been waiting for it. I've been waiting for it. Here it is, part two of our interview with animation artist Cynthia Petrovic. Please sit back and enjoy. So how long were you at Warner Brothers? You were there for, I left.
Yes, I worked, second season of Tiny Toons, and we did the Tiny Toons Vacation, mm-hmm. what I did on summer vacation.
Right.
Then Animaniacs was being developed. I was part of the development team.
Yes.
So I was actually in the room in Jean McCurdy's office when she was developing her idea to make Yakko like Groucho.
Okay.
I was there for that meeting,
you know,
when that all happened. She had, you know, one of the horse feathers or one of the, you know, Marx Brothers movies on a little TV, and I was like, this is what I want Yakko to be like. So it's like, I was there at the beginning.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they compiled a huge, like, you know, these different ideas, tons of characters, a lot that didn't make it.
Mm-hmm.
But we were all supposed to do little presentations, you know, create the characters.
Yeah.
That was fun. And then the show began, and you were along for this ride.
Right.
And about the middle of 94... is when I really wanted to jump into boards. We were doing Pinky and the Brain.
Mm-hmm.
That interested me. Out of all the stuff, Animaniacs was okay. It was not really my favorite. Not really my thing.
Right.
I know people are kind of surprised to hear that because it's very popular.
You're talking about the whole show, or are you talking about just the Warner
Bros. As it was created.
Right.
The characters that they ended up with, and, you know, Chicken Boo. And, you know, some of those other things that I felt some people were just paid way too much for. Anyway, we had a lot of conversations about that as artists.
We have. I hated Mindy and Buttons.
Yeah, that was lame. It was lame, but, you know, yeah. It was like, this was Spielberg, you know, they took these things into Spielberg's office and pitched stuff. In fact, mm-hmm. Tom Ruger came in up to me one day and he said, oh, yeah, Spielberg loved some of the drawings you did. You know, there was some, he didn't make it. It didn't make it into the final workings, but it was nice to be acknowledged that, you know, I was part of something.
Right.
You know, then we got to sit down and we do boards and we got to, you know, buy the letter, can't change anything. It's got to be that. And I wanted to move into something else. I wanted to do boards. And basically, there was a person who was standing in my way. Okay. Mm-hmm. You know, his assessment was that, no, you know, you kind of need to do more. We need to see more of your work. Because I wanted to get a salary. I wanted the board salary and the opportunity to do what I felt I was meant to do.
Right.
And he wasn't going to let it happen. Okay. And at that same time, Tony Craig had kind of, you know, sometimes things wind down with you.
Right.
Mentally. Mm-hmm. It's like kind of, you know, it's time to move on.
Yeah.
Other opportunities. And he left to go to Disney TV. And he invited me over to follow him to end up doing storyboards on Timon and Pumbaa.
Wow.
Timon and Pumbaa show.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I did. I, you know, I mean, despite all that, I had the experience at Warner Brothers, the opportunity to work that early on when things were still a little Wild West.
Yeah.
And with so much talent and to learn on the job.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I couldn't ask for, like I said, I don't know how else to describe it, but just a miracle, perfect timing. All you guys were just, I felt like I had the high school I never had because we would all go to lunch together as a big group.
Yes.
That's different for me. I mean, we were a big, tight group of people.
Yeah.
And we'd go to lunch and crab and complain and compare notes and laugh and mock. You know, stuff that we had to get it out.
It was funny.
And I just value, I love this, one of the highlights of my life, you know,
yeah.
That period. And then, you know, then Tony gave me the opportunity to really sit down and work on learning boards.
Right.
And I loved working on Timon and Pumbaa. Timon was great
because
he was a nervous little guy.
Right.
Yeah. I like the kind of nervous, worried little
quirky,
unhappy-ish type.
Yeah, the quirky characters.
To work with.
Quirky, fun characters, you know? Not straight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's funny, like the Looney Tunes characters, they were quirky back in the day, and now they're kind of like, they're all straight men, you know? And,
oh my gosh. Yes. Yeah. I've worked on another incarnation of the Looney Tunes, and I didn't like 1 minute of working on it. I really didn't. I just.
Yeah.
Not. They, well. There's such this desire to turn things into sitcoms because they've never, oftentimes they don't cast the writers appropriately. They're not cartoon writers. They want to work on, well, back then it was, they want to go work on Seinfeld or something. You know, they wanted to be sitcom writers.
Right.
And they give them to us and we get these huge scripts with characters sitting around with a remote control in their hand, sitting on the couch, cutting back and forth. I hated that stuff. Drawing that stuff out.
Mm-hmm.
You just want to hang yourself.
Yeah.
That is meant for quick acting.
Right.
You know, but like live action acting.
Yeah.
If you can get it done, you know.
Right.
But to sit and draw, getting Bugs Bunny's ears right from a back shot, you got to reset things up over and over again.
Yeah.
It was just, it was an exercise and the schedules were just.
Yeah. No, I understand because I've worked on a lot of that stuff. And mm-hmm. it just made me want to just, I don't want to say like shoot myself, but it just, you know, after a while, it's not fun. You're just kind of trying to illustrate what somebody else wrote. That's not all
that
fun.
Writing, like I said, they're writing sitcoms.
Yeah.
I mean, was Tom and Jerry scripts, would they have been 25 pages long?
No.
Well, only if they sat and talked and talked and talked and talked. And then, you know, as the years progressed and I settled into storyboarding. And then, I did some directing as well, which those were some great opportunities as well.
Right.
But I was starting to hear this term that really made me sick was that it's too cartoony.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yep.
That we're making the cartoons too cartoony.
Right.
Why did you choose the animation unit to make this stuff?
Right.
Why are they not being shot as sitcoms?
Crazy. It's kind of crazy. That is a tendency today. Everything is like that.
Too cartoony?
Yeah. Not too cartoony, just too live action, too sitcom-y. You know, they're not visual anymore. You know, even back in Rocky and Bullwinkle, when those things were seriously scripted, they were funny. Mm. They were funny. Mm. There's funny drawings, there's funny actions, cheapest animation on the planet, but still very cartoony, still fun, you know? And I think we're missing a lot of that today. So,
well, animation has definitely morphed and become, to, in my opinion, very formulaic.
Mm-hmm.
That it's gonna. I mean,
do people pitch? Do you think that's the reason why these last two Disney releases, Wish and the Marvels, do you think that's the reason why they bombed so miserably? I mean, I saw Encanto. I did not like Encanto. I felt like they took the characters from another film and just changed the faces a little bit. And there was nothing appealing.
The same things. Well, I have stopped going to Pixar and Disney movies because they aren't giving me what I want anymore.
Right.
And yes, I couldn't finish Encanto. Sorry. It was just like, there was so much stuff going on and it's so almost like so dazzling and so saturated,
mm-hmm.
but not with really what's going to hook me into the movies. And yeah, what the new ones? Oh, Wish does not look interesting at all. I don't know. And I'm going to say something else because we could talk, hey, why don't you like whatever?
Right.
I'm not into the kind of where everything is about your psyche now.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched some of Monsters, Inc. That's a darn great movie.
Right.
That's probably my favorite Pixar. I know people like The Incredibles and everything, mm-hmm. but Monsters, Inc. was my kind of just absurd and wacky. And you're working with the personalities that you're given with these voice performances.
Yeah.
But
no,
what's
wonderful.
Happening today is I lost my train of thought.
No.
I can't watch I don't watch any new. They're cookie cutter expressions. Like everybody, okay, you drive by a poster for a new animated thing. Everybody looks like this. Arms are crossed, like a, you know,
right.
a smart aleck. Yeah, you just try it, Buster. You just try it. Everything's got this kind of at a distance, you know, or the little mascot. Oh,
right.
He's got to have a little hamster or a pig or a chicken or a lamb, and that's going to be the thing that's going to make us $1 billion, right, folks?
Yeah.
We are, oh, this is what I was going to say when I lost my train of thought. Here's another thing to consider. I think the animation market is way oversaturated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why are we making a feature a year? Why are multiple studios making a feature a year? And they're not even that good.
Right. Disney had the capability of doing that. They did that early on. So they had...
Feature a year?
Yeah. Snow White. Well, Snow White, and then it went to Pinocchio, Fantasia, Bambi, and then Dumbo. All produced... Within what, 5 years? 1937, 1942, right? So why didn't they go back to that? Why didn't they go back to that when they, you know, they had a hit with Cinderella back in 1950? You know, I mean, they did Alice in Wonderland the following year, and then it was 2 years later.
51.
Yeah, it was 53.
And then Lady and the Tramp was 55. I don't think there was anything for a few years. But, well, yeah. I guess if I want to clarify that, it seems like multiple features are coming out.
Yeah.
Multiple. Because there's always a Pixar. There's always a Disney. And then they'll be like, you know, like, who does Trolls?
DreamWorks.
DreamWorks. Okay.
Yeah.
So we've got another studio. And, you know, look, I'm all for competition. I'm all right with that.
Right.
But it just seems like it's more, the market's being glutted. Before you can even sit and really absorb and enjoy something and think about it. Mm-hmm. Wow, we got some new thing coming. But I just don't think they're that good either.
Yeah.
Am I wrong or am I too old? Or
I just think they're being produced so quick that the attention to quality isn't there, you know? And I think there's a lot of formula. I think they're using a lot of formula to churn these things out. I think there's too much executive involvement. I heard something recently with the head of Disney basically saying, oh, the reason why these films failed, Wish and the Marvels, was there wasn't enough executive input. You know, we didn't have enough executives out there on the production, which to me is ridiculous because the executives ruin it. You know, they always ruin it. You let the creatives do what they do. You find the money to do it. You find the money to promote it. You do that. That's your job. You know, pick the project, let the creatives run with it. Let them do their job because they know what their job is.
Well,
so
we could also be running into an issue where you can't guarantee, this is art, right?
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, it's a piece of art.
Right.
That's what a film is.
Yeah.
Okay. You can't guarantee it's going to appeal to, you know, there's always got to be some numbers you got to hit.
Right.
You spent $70 million on it or whatever. So we got to make double or triple that. You know, there's got to be, and I don't know that art necessarily is ever really going to play that way
mm-hmm.
entirely.
No.
I just feel like I said that there's a glut of kind of mediocre, repetitive, everybody's got the same expression.
Yeah.
You know, it's always, it's the girl who doesn't have the parents and, you know, it's got to be the, she's doing that kind of well, like kind of awkward. She's cute. She's super cute.
Right.
But she's kind of, you know, biting her lip and doing the eye rolls or doing that mermaid blowing the hair
yeah.
thing.
Which
like everybody's doing the same thing.
I know. They apply that to a horse, too. They have the lower lip come out and blow the hair up, you know,
I mean, that can be a cute little signature thing you do as a studio, but I'm just seeing that, oh, my God, another story. I watched the preview for Whisk. Well, first of all, the poster on the bus stop didn't interest me.
Right.
A lot of it is what you choose, you know, on your promotional material. And then I watched the preview, and it's like, oh, we got another kind of weird, oddball, cute young lady mm-hmm. who doesn't fit in, who wants more, wants something different, or wants to... Didn't we just sit through this last year and the year before?
What? Right. It's interesting, right?
You know, the Incredibles at least had something really different, like a superhero family with family issues. I mean, it did have a different idea, but you can't force feed people art. And sometimes I think there's just a little bit of a fatigue. I think there's a Disney fatigue. How much stuff are you going to cram in that park?
Yeah. True.
Stuff that's $110, $120 now to go and flip around with a, you know, Star Wars plastic cup filled with slushies. And
yeah.
What is going on here?
Wait an hour and a half to get on a ride that lasts about four minutes.
Well,
yeah. You know,
see what I mean by
I do.
Saturated?
One thing I want to point out, and I don't know if you've noticed this too, whenever a movie is desperately trying to get an audience, people to go to see it, they break out the actors in the advertisements. So it's like they show somebody behind a microphone. Look, it's Robin Williams.
Cameron Diaz.
Or it's, I mean, it doesn't even have to be a big name. You know, they'll just have somebody like Dom DeLuise, you know. They'll have somebody behind a microphone. They're shooting them. And it's like, and whenever I see that, I go, oh, boy, this must be a stinker. And they did that and they did that with Wish. They did it with Wish. So it's like I don't remember Disney ever doing that with any of their movies back in the, you know, going back, you know, 20, 30 years when they had these, you know, it was the Jungle Book. They never, it wasn't Phil Harris in Jungle Book or Louis Prima.
Sebastian Cabot.
Yeah, exactly. Who nobody knows who that is, you know.
No, DreamWorks feature started that trend.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it started around Shark Tale.
Ooh.
The DreamWorks is responsible for pulling the name brand celebrities into features.
Right.
Animated features. And really promoting that as, oh, yeah, that's where it started. I remember.
Yeah, but nobody's going to see Pocahontas because of Mel Gibson, you know?
But it has a guarantee on it. Like, this is a proven, trusted name.
For animation?
And it's familiar. It's familiar. Yeah. See, you see a movie and somebody might say, I don't know, Wish, what that's all about. Oh, it's got Dom DeLuise doing the voice. Okay, let's check it out. I like that. You know what I mean?
That's right. It should be interesting because he's been dead for 20 years. You know?
Yeah, he's probably going to have like a non-speaking part.
How does that work? They shut
him in and put the microphone next to his dusty coffin. Good job, Dom.
Good job, Dom. You did this drawing. There was a magazine years ago, and I'm just going to bring this up. And she knows what I'm talking about. There was a magazine, and I think it was called The Art of Storyboard. No, it was Storyboard, The Art of Animation. I think that was the name of it, right?
Yeah.
And so It was supposed to be this full color, glossy, I mean, really well produced magazine about animation. And all it had in there were shots of the publisher of the magazine riding Splash Mountain. And it was like every, and it was, you know, they'd have a picture of Walt Disney in there occasionally, and it would say, "Thanks for the magic, Walt," you know, and you know, it wasn't very good. But anyway, the publisher passed away really young, and I think he meant well. I think he was just having fun, you know, and I won't say his name, but you did this wonderful drawing. Uh-oh. Because all these magazine covers had him with a bunch of animators on Splash Mountain coming down
What Brian's trying to say is that it was very repetitive, and he had a very narrow scope, and he was always on rides at Disneyland and talking about the same stuff. It seemed like every magazine was the same. We're going to have another tour of Splash Mountain.
Right.
Okay, continue.
Yeah. So you did this drawing after he passed away. And it was probably the darkest type of humor, but it really just kind of said it all. And you know what I'm talking about because you're just losing it over there.
I
lost it when I saw the drawing because it was absolutely hysterical. It had to be around, what, the early 90s at Warner's? And so it was, you know, they have logs on the Splash Mountain ride. You ride on the logs, and one of the logs was a coffin. And I don't think you put a caption on it, but it was one of those things that if I was eating lunch, I would have just lost it.
He's taking his last dip down that
hippity-doo-dah. Yeah.
You know, he's listening to that, the song of the South. He's going down.
Yep. But.
Well, he loved it that much.
He loved it that much. That kind of said it. That said it all.
I think I remember. Did I give that to you? Maybe I have it. I don't know if I.
I think you showed it to me, and I photocopied it. I have it somewhere because it was just so funny, so funny.
You'd have
making
to
commentary
know about this. Not many people would know get the joke, which makes it all the more special. You'd have to know about this particular magazine to know how nerd. I mean, this was a
nerd fest. It was a nerd fest.
A nerd fest, and he was so gushing. Oh, and there's always an interview with Andreas Deja.
Oh, yeah.
That was another thing he would feature, like, repetitively. Like, it was only three subjects.
Right. A cheers and jeers section. Do you remember the cheers and jeers section?
Oh, did he? At the end, he would, like, compliment something like, oh, the popcorn at the park was kind of stale.
Yeah, and then it would be like, cheers for the Disney company pulling Dumbo off the shelves, you know. Be something like that.
Shaking its fist at that.
Yeah. Very funny.
When you think about
you're a funny lady, Cynthia.
I enjoy making people laugh. Mm-hmm. I have found it to be kind of like socially for me, kind of an icebreaker.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was thinking about this a lot. Recently is that, you know, I have kind of that sarcastic sense of humor, and I find that either people really get what I'm saying and they laugh and, you know, okay, you know what I mean. You know what I'm saying? Cause I'll say, throw out something that doesn't sound like a joke initially.
Right.
And then there's that half a second and it's like, my God,
it kicks in,
you know, and if you don't,
yeah,
there are a few people who just kind of sit there and stare at me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I run these hikes on Sunday nights. And last Sunday, you know, some water running down this creek that we're going to make some crosses over. And at the beginning, I tell everybody, hey, here we are. Okay, tonight we're going to go down the Gabrielino Trail and we're going to go careening and crashing into the water. You know what I mean? I kind of make this kind of like a dark little joke about it, but it's just to lighten things up.
Right.
And this guy who was new to my group stood there and he says, wow, kind of dark. And it's one of those moments where I think if I was younger, I might have been like, oh, good Lord. Gosh. Right. You know, it would have made me feel like, boy, Cynthia overdid it. Yeah. I don't want to upset. I didn't mean to make somebody uncomfortable. But now it's like, you know what? I didn't get it. Whatever. I just move on. It's part of who I am. And there are appropriate times for it and not so appropriate, I guess. But it's part of who I am. It's how I think. It's the monologue in my head when I walk through life. It's the running commentary. And you turn that into stories.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I get all my stories from real life. There's nothing, you couldn't script real life. You can't script reality.
Yeah. There's some amazing stories that you get from real life that if you try to explain it to people, they'd be like, no, that didn't happen. You're lying, you know? But all the stuff that I see, man, there was a time, I've said this story before on the podcast, but I was walking in New York City, I was going to class, and there was some guys getting out of a truck, and they were bringing this giant sandwich, had to be like a 12-foot sandwich, and they're walking toward the building, and it's one of those revolving doors, and it's kind of like, I saw that in my head before it even got there, that they were going to mm-hmm. try to go in through the revolving doors, even though there was like just a regular door to the right of that.
Yeah.
And they brought this giant sandwich in there, and somebody on the other side was coming out, and he was pushing the door, and the sandwich ended up getting smushed against the glass.
They really tried it on something that is going to bend at an angle within a second?
Yeah. And it really happened. And people are often surprised when I tell that story. They go, no, that's made up. I said, no, that happened. That really happened. But what's really weird is I saw it before it happened. I saw them moving toward that door, and in my head, they were already smushing that sandwich in the door. So things like that do happen. So there you go.
Well, also, you know, maybe if we jump back to the subject of kind of maybe being a little frustrated with the kind of work that we do or the shows or the limitations put on us, because, you know, we are hired guns.
Mm-hmm.
And I have accepted that for a long time that, you know, I know my place. I stay in my lane.
Right.
The thing is, you know, when we observe and we're natural comedians, we know what's going to be damn funny. We know it's going to be funny. We're naturally gifted at that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You'd like anticipating that or seeing something happen before it happens. And you just know we don't have a lot of opportunity these days to use any of our spontaneous ideas in our work. Everything is very locked down to script, to word, to everything. You know, you stay not just in your lane, but in a box. And we're not really asked to collaborate that much.
It's really sad. You know, because
they don't want our opinions. And, you know, that's another thing I've come to accept, because mm-hmm. you can only fight it for so long.
Right.
You know, nobody cares. Nobody wants to hear your joke.
Nobody wants to hear
it. It's already been written out. You just do this one.
Yeah. And you're not a team player if you do that, right? If you start pushing against it, right? You start pushing against it.
If you start pushing against it again, you're moving out of being the hired gun, because you aren't there you know, give them ideas. They give you the idea. But I'm just saying that I think that this natural tendency we have to kind of up it, you know, what gag sessions used to be all about.
Right.
Laughing and coming up with this ridiculous skit. And if we're on the floor laughing our asses off at the absurdity of this,
mm-hmm.
well, isn't the audience going to enjoy it too? And we can't, it doesn't seem like there's hardly any opportunity.
It seems
to
like
incorporate any of that spontaneous humor into
what
we do.
I think you get some of that with certain projects. And I think Ren and Stimpy had a lot of that, you know, when they were doing those shows. You know, you had...
Well, you can tell that it did. You can tell that it did. But I'm talking about, let's say, what's in the past 5-10 years.
Right.
What's going on where we really have gag sessions.
It's crazy.
Warner Brothers was like the height. That was the peak of, you know, and there's been a few little moments. Great moments. You know, I really love directing, you know, Clifford and Jakers and everything. And
now, when did that
Strawberry Shortcake?
Did Jakers come first, or was it Clifford first, wasn't it?
No, it was Clifford. I was kind of, you know, again, I had 5 years at Disney Animation, and I love those years because I learned how to board.
But
it was time to move on at that point.
Okay, so
you were doing
Timon and Pumbaa. Did you work on Dalmatians?
Then Mouseworks.
Mouseworks.
Yeah, Dalmatians was after that. 101 Dalmatians, and then Mouseworks. And
Mickey Mouseworks. Yeah.
We had moved out of the Cahuenga building, and then back onto the Frank Wells. We were on the lot for a while, and then I left Disney.
Right.
I left Mouseworks. I was done with that, and I didn't know what I was going to do, and I called John.
John
Over, another really important player in my life. This is, mm-hmm. you know. Let me say this now before I forget.
Okay.
Because, I get a little, you know, I'm sometimes a little negative about stuff. But there have been doors that have closed for me. Okay.
Right.
Doors are closed. We're done. I'm laid off or it's time to leave. I'm tired of something. Doors close, but there are doors that open as well. It's not all about having doors closed. Now, they may not always close and open at the same time.
Right.
Sometimes there's a gap or whatever, but you do have to make the effort, you know, like you said, what's the coincidence? What's the difference in coincidence and making something happen, like making an effort? I called John that same week. I said, what's going on? Because I knew he was over at Mike Young Productions, which is now Splash. And he says, yeah, come on over. Come on over. We'd love to have you. And I was doing boards there for a little bit. Okay, so we got a parallel job. Not bad.
Right.
And then I got a call from Disney the next spring to work on Tarzan. They wanted me to come back to work on something completely different. Okay, cool, great. I'm glad I'm still on the roster somewhere.
Right.
And when Mike Young heard about it, they made me a supervisor.
Wow.
To keep me on Clifford. Well, because they were kind of an up-and-coming smaller studio. And to have John and I, Disney alumni, working there was like a big deal to them. They wanted to keep us.
Absolutely.
And that just Mike Young, John Over, that period of time was like getting out of the big studio was exactly what I needed to do at that time to move, to progress.
Didn't they have like another Clifford show? They had...
So there was a movie that John and I were not involved in. And then there was a little Clifford where his it was like his puppy days.
Yeah.
I wasn't working on that. And they, yeah, there was actually, there's a newer Clifford, isn't there? I don't know what company made that. There's a newer one where they redesigned it yet again.
Didn't they, they made a movie, like a regular live action movie out of Clifford, didn't they?
They did.
But you guys had nothing to do with that. Yeah.
Oh God. Well, no, that was just a few years ago.
Yeah. But okay. So Puppy Tales, you were you directing on that? Were you writing and directing on that? Not yet.
No, I was busy on, Jakers. That was the next show after the little Irish pig, the CGI, but John was also, you know, the main supervising director, and I was an episodic director on that.
Oh, I see.
That was a cute show, too.
Now, didn't you guys win some Emmys off of these shows? Because you...
John won a... Yeah, he won a total of 4 Emmys, but I can't tell you exactly, like, what the categories were.
Okay.
I don't quite know.
Right. So...
Or the, what the show might have won itself. It might have won a BAFTA. I don't know. I don't know. If Mike Young is listening to this, he'll correct me. He'll let me know.
Well, then you let me know, and I'll put it in the intro.
Okay.
All right. But let's see. So how long did that go for, the Jakers? What is it? Well, the Adventure of Piggly Winks? That's the name. That's the full name, right?
Yes, yeah. Jakers, The Adventure, Adventures of Piggly Winks. I think maybe 2 years, 2 seasons, I think we got out of that.
Right.
Yeah.
Interesting. What, did you have fun working on that, or?
Yes, yes, yeah. I mean, you're working with so many, you know, different. I mean, that this is also you're learning new skills as a director,
right?
Because you've got to juggle and inspire multiple people, and everybody works a little different, you know. And you've got to be able to kind of shift gears. Some people are really just leave me alone. I'll come back in 4 weeks with a finished board. Some people don't finish their work. I mean, you don't know, you know, and you got to. You know, over the years, I've learned that, you know, sometimes you do have to, you know, some people are just not meant for one show. And then you got to bring in and you got to get your crew together. And, you know, you work as a team. You know, you say, let's maybe we should do this. Let's get this done. It's certain language that I think I felt I learned. You know, a lot of times I learned from other people's bad examples.
Right.
Like what directors and producers sometimes. Didn't make me feel so great. Didn't motivate me. Maybe I didn't like the way they, you know, that's such a big part of getting a great job out of people. Just treating them with a little respect. And, you know, doesn't always happen. You know, most of the time everything's cool. Right. But I've learned from that as well.
It's interesting because I've had directors say, you know, wouldn't it be better if we, you know, if you did a little bit of this in there and then kind of just leave it to you to kind of create that, right? He, but he's pretty much telling you, this is what you should be doing, you dumbo, you know, and then you pick up on that and then you go, oh, okay, I better be doing this. But it's a nicer way of saying it than do this, right?
Yeah, and this isn't good. This is not good. Yeah. Whatever, just a big block. Because, you know, look, that's what I've learned. Here's one thing I've learned is that there's a lot of people, most times, you know, the directors are great artists. okay, they have earned the position because they can get the thing done. Mm-hmm. They have the vision. They see the whole package. They can do the work. They know it has to be done.
Right.
But they're not always great people persons.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They don't know how to, you know, they didn't have to, because art is a very solitary job, right?
Right.
You sit there alone and do your thing, and you've learned really, you know, you're very competent mm-hmm. at the artistic end of it.
Right.
But you don't really, I can see some people just don't understand how to, and then even as a board artist or whatever you are, you got to learn to kind of, all right, don't take it personally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he may have said it that way that makes me feel like I'm a loser or he's a jerk or why are you, but it's like they treat everybody the same. Ultimately, if you stick around long enough, everybody kind of feels the same way
right.
about somebody. It's not just you that's like, boy, you are really the, you know, the weak cog here.
Yeah.
It's just something in them, and it just, you know, so I just bear that in mind.
Right.
That people do respond to that, and they do remember how they've been treated.
Right. That's true. That's true. And you have to treat people with respect, because everybody who's there deserves to be there, right? Everybody's gone through their own little...
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody deserves to be there. If they're hired, they're, you know, and they're continuing to work for that crew, then... You know, they have to have something, right? So, okay. So, on Jaker's, did you find it easier working on that project than like the Clifford show, or?
I don't know that they were either. You know, I mean, the formula on how to get things done is similar.
Right.
You know, the pipeline, let's mm-hmm. say.
Right.
Of, you know, when certain things are supposed to be done.
Yeah.
So, no, I wouldn't say that either or. I think Clifford was kind of a little extra exciting because it was my first opportunity to really get in and, you know, be in a leadership position. So that has I have a lot of good memories from that. Mm-hmm. It was fun.
Well,
you know,
good.
Jaker's was like, okay, here's the next one that's coming down the line. And, you know, yeah. I actually took a trip to Ireland actually to sort of, you know, get inspired for the show.
Wasn't the creator from Ireland for that show?
Yes. Yes. And what we ended up, oh my gosh, the little drawing that he had done that, you know, Mike bought the rights for the Piggly Winks thing, but we crafted it into something so cute.
Right. I remember it being
like a little.
I remember it being a great show, and it was computer animated.
It was. That was a CGI. So that had all kinds of different technical issues that had to be contended with, limitations.
Mm-hmm.
Or like, this costs too much. We can't render. You know, you're getting feedback like that.
Yeah.
You know, if you create something, no, that's going to cost too much. You find yourself doing a lot of cheaper workaround.
Right.
Because it's a different budget.
Yeah.
You know, that's a whole nother thing when it comes to, you know, putting a show together is budgetary. Clifford was hand-drawn.
Well, it's no, I always believe with TV, you got to know your limitations. I've always said that.
The budget's different.
Yeah. The budgets are different, but, you know, you don't have a whole lot of time. Make things work. You know, there was a particular filmmaker, is a 2D animator, that he would always do these shots, you know, at, like every film. He would have a shot where the camera's placed on the ceiling and be looking down on the characters. And it would always look like crap. And the reason why it looked like crap was because the animators, in order for that, it really required a lot of great drawing on everybody's part. But it never looked anchored down to the background. It always looked like it was floating on the background, because you can't really get the illusion of gravity too well from that shot.
You're looking down directly on people's
directly
heads.
Down, like high up.
Well, that's generally
up.
A shot you don't.
Yeah, you don't do.
That's not really a usual shot that you would use, unless there's a specific reason.
Right. But there was no reason. It was just basically, you know... I don't know if you had a fetish for that type of shot, you know, but I just felt like, wow, it makes it more difficult for people to watch it, you know, because you don't really, you're looking down on this thing. It's like, why am I looking down on these characters? There's no reason for it, you know, there's no dramatics to it. There's nothing, you know, it's just blah. But he insisted on using this, and I was just like, wow, you know. Just because you can doesn't mean you should, you know, and that's the way I look at it. But anyway.
Well, if you have an objection, let's say as a storyboarder, You know, mm-hmm. I've been asked to do some things that I don't really agree with. Like, well, that doesn't make it funnier. That right. doesn't make it clearer. But it's your show. You know, I mean, you got to learn. That's one of the big skills, you know, as a board artist, is that you got to really let it go. Let it go. Doesn't matter. You know what? Some of the work that we do currently, you know, the whole theme can get removed. Right. We're not even, that's something you toiled over. Mm-hmm. It's cut. Yeah, they didn't like it. We're going to write something different.
Right.
So we got to start all over again. You know what? Don't, you know, blow a gasket over that. If you really liked it, you mm-hmm. can save it. Save it. Put it in your portfolio.
Right.
You know, it's still yours. You did it.
Right.
But just keep your expectations realistic.
Exactly.
About how you're going to contribute to the show. It may not be exactly how you would want to, but...
I get
it. You follow direction. That's your job. You follow, all right. If you want the down shot on their head, we'll do it. You can deal with the consequences later. I just,
yeah.
That's what I did today in the afternoon. I drew your down shot. You move on.
Yeah. What happened after Jakers? Did you stay with Jens? Not Jens.
I did not. In fact, what happened was probably the biggest lull that I've had professionally in. It kind of was my doing. Mm-hmm. I had the opportunity to direct on Bratz. Okay, Bratz was the next property.
Bratz.
That was coming. Bratz, the dolls, just the little
the
sexy
girls,
teenage
the
dolls.
Sexy
yes.
Wow.
I turned it down.
Okay.
I turned it down. I didn't care for Bratz.
Right.
I didn't feel I was right for it. And I knew that, you know, Mucci.
Yeah.
You know, he had brilliant. He had been working on Clifford and he left and whatever. And I said, you know what? This is Mucci's thing. It's just, I don't know what it was.
Mucci Fawcett.
Most people wouldn't do that. Mucci Fawcett?
Yes.
He's an excellent artist.
Mm-hmm.
And he would have loved it. And he loved it. And I ended up doing a little bit of work on one of the episodes, but it was just not a property that I really wanted anything to do with. I didn't think I could contribute anything. I didn't understand it. Those are always the words that I...
Right.
But there are things that just aren't up my alley. I don't do superhero shows. I don't do Marvel. There's people that can do everything.
Yeah.
They do it all.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a certain genre, which I've actually broken out of with the adult comedy lately. But the Bratz was just, I didn't feel I was cast right for it.
Right.
Well, what that ended up doing was I had 2.5 years of not having full time. It kind of plopped me right down into scrambling and doing some freelance.
Right.
And it took 2.5 years to get back into a full-time, and you know about the coincidence, doors opening and closing.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever heard of the Royer, what's his name, Bill Royer? He's got his own little animation thing going where he goes around to schools and does is it called PSAs?
Yes.
Like little health warnings, like about not smoking.
Right.
And he would get kids involved with making little animated, like a 30-second don't smoke or don't do drugs or whatever. He'd go around to schools.
Right.
And he wanted some help with that. I guess it was an ad I saw. And you know where we met? A bunch of us met to talk to him about what did he pay? What were we going to do? Where did we have to go?
Mm-hmm.
Right there at the Imperial Bank building.
Wow.
Right back. And Warner Brothers was still there. They had taken over, you know, the old May Company.
Yes.
They converted that area to offices.
I remember that.
And so here's what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my grandmother was in the hospital. It was a dark, dark time. Still hadn't found any full-time work. You know, I go into this thing that paid crap. It really did. I mean, his intentions are good.
Mm-hmm.
But we're driving all the way out to like Arvin, California, you know, close to Bakersfield just to do this and come all the way home. You're not even making any money.
No.
Once you've spent gas. And I thought, all right, this isn't going to work.
Right.
You know, as I left and we walked out the doors of the lobby, you know, where that funny guy used to, the guy with the monkey, Greer and his monkey used to.
Right.
It's like I'm ghosts of my past. As I'm walking past, I see the big Warner Brothers logo
mm-hmm.
plastered right there on the former May Company or whatever.
Right.
And it was like a punch in the face. It was like, Cynthia, this, like a bat, the bat signal.
Mm-hmm.
You gotta get back into this. Come on. Come on, you can get back in the game. Let's do it.
Right.
And I called somebody I knew who was at Warner Brothers. He put me in touch with Eric Radomski.
Right.
And I got onto his Scooby-Doo remake.
Wow.
I mean, literally within a day or so.
Right.
It was like, there's that weird thing where, you know, it's like these hidden portals. And you recognize one all of a sudden.
Right.
You know, right when you need it.
Yeah.
Because that was kind of pretty low. It was like, yeah, sitting there at this job that wasn't going to basically pay me anything. And it's like, okay, come on.
Right.
You're a professional. We can push a little harder. Right. So yeah, that floated me back up and I was back at Warner's, and that was only just for a few months. I went back to Mike Young, directed on one of their DVDs, landed Strawberry Shortcake, directed on the video, and then the series.
Right.
Yeah. So it was Mike Young again. They've always been very nice to me. Right. Very, you know, kind of like a safety net sometimes when I've really needed something.
Sure.
But that lasted a year or so.
Where was Mike
and
Young?
Back to Warner. Huh?
Where was Mike Young based? Because Warner's was in Sherman Oaks at that time. And
yeah, originally from Wales. He developed, created Superkid, which was kind of a phenomenon over in the UK.
Yeah, I
kind of
liked
but he
it.
He came and That's yeah, right. he established his studio in Woodland Hills.
Woodland Hills, all right.
Yeah, and Clifford was like his big, the first big, you know,
right.
property. That was with Scholastic. So we're talking, okay, you know,
yeah,
we're moving up. So I was happy to be part of that. And, you know, he's, of course, since brought in a lot more. He does a lot of the licensed toy work.
Right.
So he'll create cartoons for like licensed toys and stuff, which is, you know, Strawberry Shortcake and whatnot. Brat was another thing that he did.
Right.
And so, yeah, then back to Warner Brothers and then Nickelodeon. I spent some time at Nickelodeon.
Now, what were you
Never
doing there?
There before.
What were you doing there?
Boards and Shimmer and Shine and Wally Kazam.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of, you know, it's okay. Didn't have any issues. Didn't have any problems there. Sort right. of a garden variety animation studio experience.
That's the thing with
and then,
that's the thing with a lot of animation artists, you know, unless you're working for Disney on a full, you know, one picture after another, you know,
yeah.
you're basically just jumping around, you know, you work a year or 2 years, 3 years, and then you're moving on somewhere else.
Oh yeah. There's no guarantees. Yeah. That's another little headache of this business. I was just talking to some people about a couple nights ago, you know, there's people looking for work right now.
Mm-hmm.
And where do we find the work? You know, there's no central job board per se. There's no really central website for us to go on to know when people need help. When are they going to need help? And yeah, you could be doing great. You could do an excellent job on a show, but it's come to an end and they lay you off. And then it's up to you to better have some money saved.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's one of the little, there's a few people have managed to make a lifelong career. I'll bet there's still some Simpsons guys, original Simpsons guys from like 1990 still there.
Yeah.
There has to be.
I know back in the 70s, it was like it got to the point where the cartoonists were working 6 months out of the year and they were laid off for the next 6 months. They would get some job.
The 90s ended up like that?
No, like the 70s. 70s, early
80s.
70s. Yeah. And then it was 6 months on, 6 months off, and then you'd be called back. Yeah. It just didn't sound very consistent until the late 80s, and then everything kind of picked up. But it was still kind of sporadic. I mean, Warner Brothers, a lot of people were there for, what, 4 years, 5 years? And then...
Yeah, you have a good run.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And then you're moving on to somewhere else. But I think at that time, people were calling you, too. You had friends and... There was always a project that people needed somebody, or they needed a bunch of people. But now we're getting into like the 2000s now, right? With
about 2016. Well, that's when I'm visualizing all these different jobs I'm naming. Yeah.
Yeah. So okay. So what happened after this stint? Because now you're back with Mike Young, and was the company now?
No, well. You mean after Nickelodeon?
Yeah. Did you go back to him? Or?
I left the Nickelodeon job because Matt Danner, who is a wonderful human being, by the way, he's like an executive producer, was heading up a new reboot of the Three Caballeros.
Oh, wow.
There's no way I was going to miss out on that.
Right.
Three Caballeros, are you kidding?
I love
it. You know, that was one of my biggest, you know, inspirations back in the day. So even though it was only going to be for about 4 months.
Right.
Yeah. It was only going to be for 4 months. But I left. Of course, I went and worked at Six Point Harness.
Uh-huh.
Much smaller studio, a little independent.
Right.
Union. mm-hmm. which was good. And I loved it. I was so glad that I did that. And literally within a couple months after getting laid off, I was back at Warner's working on Wacky Races.
Wow.
On it for about a year. And I never thought I could do like race car. That was another thing. I was like, Cynthia can't do this. But yeah, it was all right. You find a way to work with it. You figure out from all you know now.
Right.
You figure out, you know, they're probably going to want you in a low shot or whatever. Or they'll fix it, you know, we'll fix it together and get it done. And then I went to Muppet Babies for 3 seasons. That was a good, long, solid run. That was good.
What year was that? Do you remember? Was that 20?
It was 2017 to 2020, right when the pandemic began.
Right. Where was that? What studio did that?
That was Oddbot working as a subcontractor for Disney Junior.
Okay.
It was ultimately on Disney Junior, the Muppet Babies. And it was a cute show.
Right.
DEI. Yeah, that was cute. Good people. It was like a little family. It felt kind of like a family.
What'd you do during the pandemic? How'd that work for you?
Pandemic, yes. That summer, I got a directing opportunity on Wolf Boy and the Everything Factory.
Okay. Where was for who?
With Sean Bishop. That was a bento box.
Okay.
Sean brought me in. And That was great. That was great. It was maybe a year. You know, they stuffed 2 seasons into 1 year.
Right.
You know, 10 episodes per season. It was a very, because the streaming is all different. We're not doing the same, you know, amount of shows and everything. But
right.
Great experience. And then I had to reapply. They let me go. I had to reapply and do a board test to get back into Bento Box.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go.
That's crazy.
You jumped through the hoops. And it was on Housebroken.
Right.
My first adult comedy foray was Housebroken.
Wow.
And
where'd that air?
It's all part of the Fox network. All of this stuff for Bento is for Fox, ultimately.
Right.
Oh, wait. Wolf Boy was on Apple Plus.
Okay.
That was, that was a streaming. So, yeah, a year of Housebroken. I left that. Had no plans. I just wanted to take some time off, actually.
Right.
I just wanted to just still cool my jets. Yeah. And then I got a call from Crapopolis.
Wow.
Also a bento. You know, they must have gotten a list of names.
Right.
You know, I came recommended. Oh, thank you. I appreciate it.
That's always good.
And then it was like,
yeah.
Yeah. So there goes I was going to take 6 months off, you know, because these days I don't have to scramble quite as desperately as I used to.
Right.
I mean, you got to get back on the horse at some point, but I just wanted a break.
Yeah.
I needed a break.
Right.
And then it's like, well, I guess I'll come back, start working, you know, within a week. Well, there goes my break.
So are you enjoying
it? I loved it.
You're enjoying it on Crapopolis.
I am enjoying it. I'm enjoying it. You know what today, these days, is actually more important than the project. It's the people, respectful. They're cool. You know, we have time to finish the work. We're given time.
Right.
You know, they rework it a lot. We're redoing things many times, but we get the time to do it.
Right. I think ultimately, if the shows are coming out great because of all that work, mm-hmm. Look, you're getting the paycheck, so that's great. It's nice that you have a good crew that you're working with, but when you see the show and the show is wonderful, it makes you look good, right? But it's also, it's very satisfying when you see the show and it's, so then you go, well, okay, it was a lot of work. It was a lot of revisions and stuff, but you know, but I could see where they were going for. They're going for the humor and it worked out well.
Have you seen Crapopolis?
I haven't seen it yet. I have to watch it.
Mm. Yeah, it's very, it's sometimes I still, cause I'm so used to preschool where you always have to censor yourself and apologize. You might hurt somebody's feelings. Everything's very, I mean, these, you know, in these adult shows, the stuff they're talking about, the sexual, innuendos and the insults and the blood and everything. It's like, this is actually kind of fun.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't, and there's one episode coming up. It was the first thing I ever worked on for them.
Okay.
Well over a year ago.
Right.
And it was a little musical sequence.
Mm-hmm.
And all they give you is the lyrics and somebody sung the song. Like, okay, they do have the song.
Right.
And here was something where I was just being asked to support it.
And you were able
and
to just,
I'm really,
yeah,
really happy with how it came out. Nobody was interfering with, you know, They just let me do it. And then, you know, in the next phase, I could see they added a few things, right. You know, adjusted a few things. That's the way it is. It's an assembly line.
Sure.
And I'm excited because I think that's premiering actually on Christmas. It may be. It's show number 13. I think it may actually be on Christmas.
So, I'll look
yeah,
for
now
it.
That's cool.
We'll all look for it. Everybody's listening to this podcast.
Yeah. It's the one where Tyrannus hippocampus builds a rocket.
Okay.
It's a rocket show. I did the musical number. Watch it.
Okay.
So anyway.
No, it sounds great.
Yeah, so basically, yeah, everything is, I guess, rolling along. And, you know, I don't have any plans just yet to retire or anything. No big moves yet.
Right.
No, I could take time off maybe and jump back in when something comes up. I don't know.
There you go.
So I'm just floating down the, I'm floating down the log ride, the Splash Mountain.
There you go.
For one final, yeah.
What's the most favorite thing you've worked on? And
I knew you were going to ask me this.
Yeah.
There's different reasons for different. The highlights obviously would be Tiny Toons because it was like amazing. Learning experience, you guys were great. Clifford was fun because it was my first directing experience. Wolf Boy was kind of cool. You know, Timon and Pumbaa, I was really getting into it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was like zooming, you know, really getting into the humor. I was laughing and laughing. We'd sit and laugh and laugh at some of the single drawings I would do of the irritated Timon.
Right.
I really had him down. It's like, my God, because, you know, the weird thing is when you get people laughing at something that you've done, it's like it's you that they're enjoying.
Right.
And that's all part of the rewarding feeling of, wow, I've really made them enjoy. I did this. It's me. Because it's me. You're this on the paper that you're seeing goofing and making weird faces and looking at it's me.
Right.
So it's that kind of a good, those are good moments.
They are. They're great moments when you make people laugh. Yeah. I love it. I love it. What's your dream project? What would be your dream project?
Well, I accomplished one of them, which is having the business, Red Tango, the side business. Well, we really haven't talked about
yet. Okay, so you had this business, and I don't think it's ever left, right? It's kind of been going on.
It's shrunk. Yeah. There's people there that don't know what it is. Basically, around 1998, 99, you know, there was always the fear in the office. We were at Disney TV at the time of, well, are they going to green light the show? Are they going to green light another season? They green light, train light, green light, everything's green light. And I thought, God, all we're doing is sitting around torturing ourselves about, are we going to have a job next year? You know, always hinging on what a studio is going to do. And I thought, could I maybe do my own thing? You know, would it be possible? And here's the odd thing. That Christmas, it was Christmas of 1998, we're all supposed to do like a gift giving, gift exchange.
Right.
And I got an 8x10 little small canvas, white canvas, and I painted this cat face on it.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, okay, this is what I'm going to do. I'm actually going to paint something.
Right.
And I did these wild star designs, and it was Professor Tango. He's like a nutty character with his tongue sticking out and the eyeglasses bugging.
Right.
And I thought, I'm looking, wait a minute. I'm not going to give this away. This is cool. Look at this.
Right.
And the very beginnings of what if I put something like this on a product? Because I had always had ideas of making t-shirts. That's nothing new.
Right.
But I think the stirrings of between realizing I had something kind of unique I could reproduce over and over again on mouse pads or stickers. You make the one piece of art and you sell it a million times.
Right.
Between that idea and being tired of always feeling like I was, you know, a captive to what the studio is going to do, whether I'm going to have a job or whatever, create.
Right.
So that's really where it, you know, it took a few years. I had a Brandy, the gal I told you about who we did our book on in the schoolyard.
Yeah.
She did my very first website for me. So nice of her to, you know, back in 1998, 99, when things were, you know, we got something started. I started printing, you know, look, you find all the places that you can find mouse pads and all the stuff, all the artwork. I was doing a lot of paintings,
right.
A lot of kind of wild, wacky stuff.
Yeah.
Set it up at the Rose Bowl swap meet, you know, see what sells. Moved over to the Melrose swap meet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's the big hipster one.
Right.
Okay, I did that every Sunday for a year. But the very first day I set up, very first day is the day that Tokyo Bay, the two people that owned Tokyo Bay from San Francisco, were on vacation and came by.
Wow.
Dory and Matthew Isaacs. And they had been looking for some new art for, they made watches and clocks, little decorator clocks for little small ones. They wanted to branch out and really start licensing something serious.
Right.
And they stopped at my table and I was there. Thank God I was there that Sunday, because you just said it. Everything could have been different.
Mm-hmm.
That never would have happened.
Right.
And she said, God, I really like this. And she took some postcards and I thought, well, that's kind of nice. She gave me a business card. And about 3 months later, she mailed me a box of her watches and clocks. And I said, you know what? This is serious.
Yeah.
She got back to me and sent me some samples of her stuff. And that began a relationship of me driving up to San Francisco every year. And well, you saw, I'm sure you've seen
the
purses, totes, watches. My God, they got into a lot of things.
Yeah. I mean, it was underwear.
It happens. Well, I made the clothing, but see, here's another thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You wanted to know about the name Red Tango.
Yes. How did Red Tango start? From? Yes.
I'll tell you.
There we go.
Okay. The cat with the long neck, the logo.
Yes.
Was something that I kind of was borrowing a little from, like, the Henry Mancini, Mr. Lucky album covers from the 60s. The cats had kind of a long, it was just kind of a style
right.
from the 60s. And mm-hmm. I was at the Rose Bowl swap meet, and I should have bought it, and I didn't. It was a red cat with a long neck, sitting there with a long neck.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, man, that's cool. There it is again. There. Let's do it. You know, we're going to figure out a way to pull this all together. I had somebody, you know, draw me a nice tight cleanup of the design, and I added that curly tail because that's my little wacky edge.
Right.
And I found, when I put that on a shirt, especially the black one with the pink sleeves, pink cat, and I put it out there at the swap meet. I'm still at the Rose Bowl swap meet, even though Tokyo Bay had come by. I was still going out there.
Right.
All the attention shifted right to that. That was it. All my other funny stuff that I kind of like better.
Right.
You know, my kind of edgy, funny-looking stuff.
Yeah. Nothing.
By the wayside.
Right.
That became, you know, numero uno. All the sales started to come in. Underwear sets, all the stuff I was making.
Right.
So that became, there it is. And then what you do is you don't always have, you can follow what you like or you follow what your customers want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's what you do. You go, I guess, and that's what everybody does. Mm-hmm. You see where the action is and you follow it.
Well, so. Not just that, it's the timing. Timing is everything.
Mm-hmm.
Because what was going on in the early 2000s, we had Shag. Shag is the artist that does all that kind of retro, you know, tiki style.
Yes.
He was like a big guy. He's still doing stuff. But he had all that colorful, fanciful tiki style.
Yes.
Paul Frank was a t-shirt. He made with all these different animal characters. Big, I mean, they made millions.
Right.
David and Goliath, Johnny Cupcakes. It was the age of the graphic t-shirt. Mighty Fine. All these different brands. I was going into stores, looking at the stuff, buying samples, taking pictures.
Right.
And eventually, it was like 2004, I walk into the Arclight Theater in L.A., and they had a gift shop, the Arclight. I walk in, and there's a Red Tango purse is sitting right next to Paul Frank's stuff.
Wow.
But mission accomplished.
There you go.
I did it.
There you go. Red Tango.
And I was doing... Yes, go ahead.
So how long did that relationship last?
Right, good question. This is also something I like to talk to about artists is handling a licensing deal and how much you should expect to make. You know, they were borrowing my artwork. I was working with them, you know, mm-hmm. collaborating on colors and whatnot. But
right.
they borrow it and then they put the money towards producing the actual products. I never made any of the shirt of the totes. That was all handled overseas.
Right.
You know, and they'd go over there once in a while and take a look and just make sure everything was coming back okay.
Right.
And I made a deal for 5% of the wholesale, I believe, is how it worked. 5% is a good number.
Right.
For, you know, if I was like Star Wars, you could command 15-20%, you know what I mean, real high-end
right.
Stuff. So about 5%, and that was fair. So every 3 months, I'd get a check from them. And yeah, that was, and then compounding that was doing the Comic Con, and I'd get a little deal on wholesale. They'd sell me everything wholesale. That's how I did it.
Right.
I got it from them wholesale, but you know, they took the big, they put the money up front.
Right.
Because you have to order hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands of items to get that kind of price.
Right.
And they had to have the warehouse to store it all.
Sure.
Oh, I would see my stuff show up on TV shows, you know, little carrying cases.
Right.
People would tell me, they'd email me, oh, I saw your shirt on, you know, there was a John Ritter had a sitcom.
Yeah.
8 Rules About Dating My Daughter or something like that.
Yeah.
She was wearing one of my tank tops.
Wow.
I got to see it. I got to get a video of it. So look, that you asked me what my big goal would be or whatever. Well, that was it.
Right. Wow.
I am certainly not against doing another venture of some sort.
Right.
You know, I'm keeping this one alive a little bit because there are people that will still buy the stuff. But
what's
I've thought about completely different. Hmm?
What's the next step of Red Tango? Because you're doing something with what, fragrances?
I don't know that there's really going to be any next step. I have some little inklings, but again, I don't tend to like to repeat myself.
Right.
Sometimes is why I can get a little frustrated with, you know, the animation business, because it's like, didn't I already board a script that was simpler to this? You know, a lot of the ideas kind of circle back again, is what I'm saying.
Sure.
Is I don't think it's time to do something the way I did it before. There's so many t-shirt makers now. See, I exited the scene right when all these like Zazzle $6 t-shirts, all these cheap print your own,
right.
You know, where it was really Society 6. All these things where artists are sticking their things and getting nothing basically,
right?
For their art. My little revolution was right before the internet really expanded into do-it-yourself t-shirt printing and stuff. So I don't know that it has to be something different. It's got to be some fresh.
Right.
Take on it.
Oh, very cool. Well, looking forward to whatever else you're going to produce.
Yeah. Well,
because I know it's going to be interesting.
You never know.
You never know.
Door closes, door opens.
They always do.
You know, but if I can leave on a positive little bit of advice is that you really got to have your own thing. I mean, this career has been amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Love it. And I'm still always learning and, you know, learning something new. But it's always important to have your own thing.
Right.
Do your own thing on the side. Don't just talk about it. Do it.
Right.
You know, get out and do that thing. If you want to sell stuff, set up. You know, if you've got a script you want to write, well, write it. Today, my God, what if we had all access to podcasts and YouTube 25 years ago? What would we be doing? I mean, or if I was a teenager and had this.
Right.
There's so many ways to be your own person now. Wonderfully executed videos on YouTube by content creators. I had no idea there was so much talent in the world.
Yeah.
Anybody can do anything. Just like Kim told me.
Right.
You could do this.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And I still believe it.
It's all true. It's all true. Just have to put the effort in.
That's the thing.
Research, effort.
Get off the couch.
That's it.
And do it. Do it.
Hey, Cynthia.
Yeah.
It was great catching up with you.
It was.
We'll talk outside of this, but
okay.
But thank you for coming on here and doing this. I know
no problem.
There's millions of people out there that are waiting to listen to this podcast eventually.
Oh my goodness. I believe it. You're doing an excellent job with these.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Honored to be part of it.
Well, you are a wonderful guest, and I consider you a friend. And
likewise.
Yeah.
Always.
Yes.
A Boyer crew, we're friends forever. Until we go floating down Splash Mountain in our coffin.
Thank you, Cynthia.
Thank you.
Do you have any questions or comments about the podcast? Please email Brian at cartoonerific.com. Your email may be featured in one of our future shows.
Well, thank you, Cynthia, for coming on the show and telling us all those wonderful stories. Maybe we'll have Cynthia back in the future to talk about some of her newer projects. Well, for the last year and a half, the show has been available on Google Podcasts. And I don't know if you know that, but that is going away. It's going to actually transition to YouTube Music. So I don't know if it's automatically going to
take that subscription and move it over. May have to subscribe to YouTube Music. It's not supposed to happen right away, but it's supposed to happen in April 2024. So, you know, make preparations. If you're already receiving the podcast on Google, just move it over to another service and then subscribe to that. And then this way you'll continue to be notified every time a brand spanking new Cartoonerific podcast is uploaded for your listening pleasure. Anyway, if you really like what you're listening to, please subscribe. And if you really like the podcast, tell a friend. Anyway, this is Brian Mitchell. I want you to have a great day, a great week. And we got more interviews, more great interviews to come. So thank you for tuning in.
This has been a Cartoonerific Studios presentation.
The Cartoonerific Podcast is copyright 2024 by Cartoonerific Studios Incorporated. All rights reserved.